it's time. It is that time. Time for Styles and Watkins.
You can join the show by texting 916-339-1140. Find us on YouTube at Sactown Sports 1140.
It's time for Alan Styles and Chris Watkins.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. On a Thursday, Styles and Watkins taking you up to 2 p.m. Nate Littlefield behind the glass for us today. And we're trying to get back on the right track, just like the same way the Kings are. The question is, can they break the cycle where they beat a team and it seems as if the chips aren't in their favor? But can they beat a short-handed Spurs team tonight? But first, let's talk about the Lakers game. I'm going to give Chris his flowers because I was worried. I was very worried about the Kings in LA. And I'll be honest with you, I sent the text to the roundtable group and I said in the first quarter, this could get ugly. You got D'Lo made the three. They're doing the ice in their veins. LeBron, have you noticed his and one celebration? It's very subtle. The shrug.
The shrug, yeah.
He loves the shrug. LeBron is shrugging. It looks like, okay, this is that Lakers team that's going to turn it on here. And thanks to Alex Len, thanks to Davion Mitchell, thanks to Keon Ellis, thanks to Malik Monk, thanks to De'Aaron Fox, thanks to Sabonis, the whole band, not the whole band, we'll talk about that, but most of the band came through and said, not on our watch, we're a bad matchup for you, we're Sonic the Hedgehog, we're Speedy Gonzalez, and we're going to run you out the gym, and that's exactly what the Kings did. Chris Watkins, how you doing?
Yo, doing good, doing great. Anytime you beat the Lakers, man, you got to feel good about it. And it was a great performance. You got a lot out of your guards. De'Aaron had a fantastic night, tied his career high. Malik Monk had a terrific night, got his little revenge against his former team. You had Davion Mitchell hitting a couple threes, more than a couple threes, four of them things. And then, you had Keon Ellis make a huge impact in that game. And, we're going to talk about it all, but... to me, that game was won by the Kings guards, and that's really not something you've been able to say all year. But I just think that the collective nature of those four guys really is it, you don't have to look any further than those four guys' performance for the reason why the Kings won yesterday. And I just don't know how many times, if at all, we've been able to say, you know, the Kings' collection of guards, not just De'Aaron and Malik,
right,
but more than that, contributed heavily to the Kings getting that one last night.
Yeah, and again, it did not look good early. And we've seen the Kings at times. We've seen them. I was more nervous. That's what's crazy. You're more nervous once they flip the switch and flip the script and they're up 20 than when they were down 20. Yeah. You're almost thinking, don't come back too soon.
No.
Don't come back too soon because
they actually need to start down.
Yes.
I think is what we learned. Is
yes.
That you actually need to go down 10 and then you need to kind of rally yourself up because if you're up too much, you're going to, the foot's going to come off the gas a little. So I think we're figuring out the formula actually is losing for a brief period is actually a good thing.
And that is...
That's Kings basketball.
That's Kings basketball.
Winning,
that's the culture.
Having the lead is actually bad, and
yes,
losing by 10 secretly is exactly where you want them.
Mm-hmm. And here's an 83% from the free throw line.
That's right.
There you go. 10 of 12. I'll be honest with you, and I know I'm not the only one, and if you feel the same way I do, you can call in, or if you don't, you can call in as well. 916-339-1140, all guests and callers. Join us from the Folsom Lake Honda hotline. Folsom Lake Honda, your one-stop Honda shop. And if you were wondering if you'd have another chance to win Chris Brown, Chris Breezy tickets, you do. That's today at 1 p.m. Nate will pick the number today. That is today at 1 p.m. your chance to win tickets to see Chris Brown. And if you're like me, the Lakers multiple times, Chris, they got it to 12. And when it went from 20 to 12, you're thinking, here we go.
Yep.
Here we go. That Lakers fan base, right? They don't pay attention when the Lakers are losing, only when they're winning.
It was real quiet in there.
They were trying. It sounded like Trae Young back in the day. It's quiet in here. Yeah. It's quiet in here. It's cold and quiet in here. And you're thinking, here we go again.
Yeah.
All right.
A couple different times.
LeBron turns it on. Mm-hmm. They start turning the ball over. Yep. Shots stop falling. And you're, all right, here we go again. And I think that was probably more impressive than coming back from down 19 was holding your own against the Lakers trying to make multiple runs.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of the Lakers' MO. We've seen them do it. LeBron treats games like a boxer,
yeah.
and he treats the season like a boxer.
A little rope-a-dope action.
Exactly.
Yep.
All right, let's keep it right at 15, and then we're going to slow the game down, get into a slog.
Get into fouls.
And we'll hear from Anthony Davis. He was complaining about the fouls because that's what they do. And then that is when you're going to look up and say, oh, wow, the Kings are only up 5, but
right.
The Kings did not allow it to happen.
No, you're right, because that's exactly what happened in the Denver game. I know they didn't have De'Aaron that game, but, we keep talking about that Malik to Trey lob that really set things off. After that, in that Denver game, the Kings lost the lead in like 3 minutes, mm-hmm. It felt like. And you're right, like that was the biggest part of last night is they got that cushion, the 22-point cushion, and that's why you get a 22-point cushion, because they did, like we said, they lost that lead. They lost about 10 points of that lead on two or three different occasions, and they did a good job of just stopping it there. We've seen this team spiral so many times this year where, you know, exactly, it's the flip of a switch in a bad way, and all of a sudden things go out the door, shots stop falling, defenses stop being played, and then next thing you know, the other team is right back in it. Last night, that was not the case at all. They had an answer for every single time. And the big thing was, I think the huge reason why, Kings got in the paint more last night than they really have all year long. I think they finished with 72 points in the paint, which is just absolutely incredible. De'Aaron had 32 points in the paint last night.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Just by himself. They understood the assignment, finally, that you can't just chuck, run and chuck,
run
man.
And chuck,
you
baby.
You can't just do that. You've got to get to the rim, and you have to establish a rim presence.
Yeah.
And I look no further than that as the reason why the Kings looked so solid last night.
Well, I was going to say, this personally for you was, obviously, De'Aaron ties his career high, but this is the De'Aaron that you want.
Yes, exactly.
Right? And he still He still took 6 threes.
Yes, he sure
But this
did.
Is the De'Aaron that you want.
Yes.
Get in the paint, use your speed, use your shiftiness,
yep.
And this is what you do. I know you were excited last night. How'd the post game go? People feeling good?
It was great. It was insane. Yeah, you're right. I didn't even realize that. 2 of 6. De'Aaron tied his career high last night, hit 2 threes,
yeah.
And that's it. That should be huge
Nate's
for him.
Under would have hit, by the way.
It absolutely would have. That's a good call there. Yeah, no, the post game was great. We had tons of people in there, of course. You know, when you play the Lakers, people get excited. It was a really good game. Post game went awesome. Really, the thing that stuck out to me, I didn't realize until I was like 75% of the way through, AD last night, cold. Oh, my goodness. He wanted none of Sabonis, and that's the thing that big picture-wise, I think I'm taking away from yesterday is, I'm sorry, maybe once I see it, I'll change my mind, but we've seen it, 9 times now? 9-0 Domantas Sabonis is over AD. I think that's a terrible matchup for AD. Like, I was talking last night about how, you know, I don't know if you remember, but when AD was still young in this league, they used to talk about how, you know, his come up where he, you know, he was in high school and all that stuff. AD came up in the game as a guard.
Mm-hmm.
He was about 6'1", 6'2", his junior year, mm-hmm. and then had a massive growth spurt. He is not built and did not come up in basketball banging around in the paint.
Yeah.
And so when you – and every guard out there will tell you they do not – I mean, no one enjoys that level of physicality that lives in the paint. And Domantas Sabonis is number one in terms of I'm going to bring the physicality to you.
Right.
I just think AD wants none of it. I think he's trying to stay as far away from him. He's trying to use his length, use his speed. But as we know, Sabonis just isn't going to let that happen. So I just think that anytime Sabonis matches up against AD, I'm giving the advantage to Sabonis every single time. I just don't think AD's game is really built to deal with the physicality that Sabonis brings. And I think it actually kind of scares him.
Yeah, well, so you're saying he's scared.
In a way, yeah. Like, I just think he's afraid of the contact.
When you think about AD when he's cooking, a lot of times you're not going to think of legit post moves, right? You're thinking of he gets in deep,
yep.
and he's either grabbing a rebound and putting it back up because of his size and athleticism, or it's mid-range jump shots.
Turnarounds, yeah,
that's
absolutely.
What it is. So if somebody isn't allowing you to get deep, That is not what AD is built for, right? And it feels like, I don't know specifically off the top of my head, it feels like at one point he had more of a three-point shot.
Oh, yeah.
He doesn't really do that anymore. And I'll put it to you like this. We're going to get into the duo conversation. I know AD turns it on, and people were in awe of what he did against the Warriors in the second round. And wow, that's why he could be Defensive Player of the Year. But to me, they might be the most overrated. And when I say overrated, it's more, it's mostly on the AD side than LeBron side, the most overrated duo in the league. Mm. Every time you talk about duos, AD and LeBron are penciled in. Yeah. Why?
Yeah.
Why?
It's legacy. I mean, it's LeBron, like you said. I mean, it's LeBron doing a lot of the heavy lifting, and I think it still is the mystique of AD. Like, I think that, and I do think, to his credit, too, I mean, AD is a monster against 90% of opponents. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you put him against Jokic, he's not going to be able to do anything against him. You put him against really any big physical center, he's going to struggle against them, but he can destroy your Bam Adebayos. He can destroy your slower foot, like Jonas Valanciunas, he can destroy. But if he's going to go against Steven Adams, I don't really love that matchup for him. So it kind of depends, again, more so on the physicality of the
player. What about your boy Valanciunas?
Yeah, I think he's a little slow-footed on the defensive end. I feel like AD could probably abuse him there, but I mean, yeah, offensively, he's gonna swallow. He's just gonna say, like, I can back this fool down and get some easy lay-ins. But AD still does have a lot of length. I just think with Sabonis having such a low center of gravity, you kind of see when Sabonis goes into AD, it almost forces him to kind of like a folding chair, kind of lean forward, and he can't use his verticality because Sabonis is kind of crunching him. So other bigger guys don't really have that advantage because they don't get as low. They don't get to the waist of AD and kind of make him crumble in the same way. So I think there's a lot of people who AD can absolutely abuse, but there are the best centers in the NBA. Joel Embiid, Karl Anthony Towns, those kind of guys. Like, I don't know how AD really matches up against those guys.
How can you be elite if you have issues against the other elite centers? How is that possible?
Great question.
Is that possible?
A lot of people would say that makes you elite, is being elite against the elite.
That's what I'm saying.
Right. Yeah.
You can't be elite against
bums. You can't be a
front
runner like that. Right.
Elite against bums? Come on now. Coming up next, do the Kings own the Lakers? We have some stats to support that. We also have some audio on LeBron James and why he went to the locker room before the game ended. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.
Sacktown Sports. Call or text at 916-339-1140.
Have some questions on the text line if you want to text in 916-339-1140. With not really a question, this is from the 916. At this point, I have more confidence in them playing on the road, sadly. I mean, the 12-seeded Rockets are 27-35 and have a much better winning percentage at home, 21-11. So I looked it up, and the Kings are 16-11 at home this season. Do you think that's part? I've always thought that sometimes playing at home can bring a little bit of pressure that you don't have when you're on the road. You're playing with house money. Obviously, in theory, you want to be home. You want to get that home-cooked meal, the Banzito's tacos,
yes,
right?
Sir.
You want those things, but there's also a level of pressure that you do not have on the road. And I wonder if you look at the bad losses that the Kings have. Look, that it's not an excuse, because if you can't handle that pressure, you're not doing anything in the playoffs. But I'm trying to figure out what it is playing at home actually a thing? And we've heard other people say, I'd rather the Kings play on the road.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds crazy to say that, but if something bad happens tonight, I'd be on that bandwagon. I'd have to be.
Yeah, no, I mean, we had the same conversation with this team last year. Last year, the Kings were 23-18 at home, which is exactly where they stand now, 5 games above .500, but they were 9 games above .500 on the road. So, you know, and we asked them about it all last year. We never got an answer that we actually liked. The answer that really was the company line, if you will, was, yeah, you know, we're still trying to figure that out ourselves. We don't think there's a correlation, but, you know, maybe there is. They did say that there is a shred of truth to what you're saying. I mean, they essentially would say, hey, you know, at home, we kind of, expect energy to be given to us. We know that, you know, we can maybe trick around for, you know, a quarter and a half because our fan base is going
to rile us too.
Up. Yeah. And then on the road, we understand we have to manufacture all of our own energy.
I
and
still
so
don't
it
understand
is,
that, though.
I don't exactly. Like
you.
I said, we didn't love the answer at the time. It feels like they don't know. And it might be as simple as there is no explanation. It's a pretty random thing. I mean, you look
They're 16-11. They don't have a losing record.
Exactly.
It's just the losses are bad.
The losses are bad. And I think Whitey told us in the crosstalk the other day, like, there has been a recent trend of these homecomings going wrong for the Kings, where every time seem to come back from a road trip or even just from a road game back home, they just kind of lose focus. So I don't know. Again, that to me seems like another just random coincidence, but at the same time, it happens 3 to 4 times and that's then an occurrence. It doesn't feel like a coincidence. So it's really frustrating. I don't know. You know, Golden 1 Center seems like it should be one of the best home court advantages in the NBA. But in a weird way, in the same way that I guess losing is good for this team, being down 10 is good and being up 10 is actually bad.
Yeah.
I guess in a weird way, being so spirited at home is actually a negative for this team because they expect the crowd to give them energy instead of taking that initiative themselves. So I guess just add it to the things that don't make sense with this team.
It doesn't make sense. And what are you going to tell the crowd to not be
exactly.
as loud?
Guys,
I mean, what is
offense
this?
At work,
offense
please.
At work. I mean, it's something to think about. I mean, look, you come to a – it's just – if they stay in the play-in, right, you would want them to be the 7th seed to have it at home.
You have to.
I don't
to.
Care.
You will
it's
always
still
have
a,
to.
It's still a winning record. Yeah. They're 16-11. It's not as if they have a losing record at home. I get why it comes out, but again, I don't think it's about the record. I think it's about who they've lost to.
Yeah.
But in a high-intensity game, because they've beat the Lakers at home. They beat the Warriors at home when it was the in-season tournament on the line, for whatever it's worth. So they've won some bigger games at home, but people still have that stench. That Lysol isn't kicking in for Game 7 against the Warriors. The Lysol isn't kicking in for some of the very stinky games against some of these teams that have no business. The last 2 weeks, I think, have really made people feel this way with the Heat loss and the Bulls loss. So maybe tonight can be the Lysol night. And
I love that name.
And you clear the Febreze night and you clean this stuff up. Let's hear from LeBron, who I didn't even notice. I mean, I'm watching the broadcast. I didn't notice when LeBron left. But let's hear from LeBron as to why he left the game with about 2-3 minutes left.
When you came out, was it your ankle? Was it?
Yeah.
Did you step on someone on a previous possession?
No, it's just my ankle. It's just what I've been I deal with before the break, after the break. Just managing as best way I can, you know. Played the whole third, sat a little bit to start the fourth. And, you know, when I got back in, it kind of just, you know, whatever. It's just,
okay.
I don't know if that's a fair or foul or whatever it is. So
it seemed foul to me.
So 3 minutes left, essentially, and he just dips.
He just literally walked into the locker room, yeah.
That 3 minutes of treatment, it just had to happen now.
Yeah, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, it was a really bad look. I mean, his team, he had to be frustrated from how that game went. But he just walked out. And it's like, you know, if I'm a team, like, I understand that's LeBron James.
Is that Mamba mentality?
No, definitely. I mean, maybe it is, I guess.
I'm just saying.
I'm sure Kobe wouldn't hate it. But, he'd probably say, leave those losers out there. I don't know. you guys get to see the scoreboard at the end. Not me. I didn't when I left. I think that it's just not a great look. Like, I mean, it's very Braun. I'm sure it might happen all the time and maybe we just don't notice it, but leaving early, like that's, I mean, we talk about leadership on this team for this team a lot, but I can't imagine if De'Aaron Fox or if Domantas Sabonis,
oh my goodness,
I mean, left the game with 3 minutes to go and his team is down 10, they're getting crucified on these airwaves.
Yeah, like, well, and look, the whole thing is that's a Hall of Famer. He's got he's got the scoring record. He's a
sure does.
You know, he is a champion of the highest order. He's one of the best players to ever play the game. You're gonna get a different leash than other people. And LeBron uses it. I mean, this man.
He left.
He is gone. And he will drink wine on the bench when he's not playing. I mean, he does whatever he wants.
Crazy. Yeah, I forgot he brought the wine to the game.
He was drinking wine on the bench.
Insane. In a hoodie.
In a hoodie.
Just brought it's a glass crazy. Of wine from home. Insane.
But
he just operates. Yeah, you know.
He's on his own time.
You know what? That's why the Lakers are the Lakers, though. They allow their guys to do that. Like, if you're on the Miami Heat and you do that,
you're cooked.
Pat Riley will meet you at your locker. Yeah, okay?
That's why he left.
Exactly. And that's why he's loving L.A. because, you know, Jeannie Buss said it after she re-signed Kobe. I want stars to know that we take care of our stars. And, you know, that's LeBron. LeBron gets to leave the game 3 minutes early. And, you know, I love it. From the Kings side, like, I know the Lakers don't think about the Kings. I know they don't want to think about the Kings. And I love that every single time the Kings play them, the Lakers feel like they're going to roll over them. And this has now been, what, I think I said six, so seven of the last eight times. Kings have just killed them, man. I'm telling you.
Oh, they got their dreams, you know, Meek Mill, Dream Chasers. Yes. They got their dreams crushed
yes.
last night because they thought the Kings were just going to roll over.
Yeah, they did.
And I think a lot of Kings fans maybe didn't think they'd roll over because of what the Kings have done against
the
Lakers.
There's a lot of, here we go again.
But it did not look good. And then you thought, okay, well, we just got to get it to 12, get it to whatever, and we can get the Kings. They'll cool off. And again, that was the most important piece of this. When we return, the smallest guy, I guess, relatively speaking, putting up big numbers in the paint. Who was it? And who has done what he has done at this height? It's not many. Styles and Watkins, Sackdown Sports.
This is Sacktown Sports.
De'Aaron Fox, we've talked about the fact that he's kind of hard to diagnose when it comes to what he does really well from an outside perspective. Ja Morant dunks. Steph Curry shoots threes. Luka does everything, right? A lot of these guards, we've compared De'Aaron Fox. Okay, Shai Gilgeous gets to the line, all right? Where does De'Aaron Fox fall? We know he is fast as all get up, but where does he fall? What is his calling card? And when you see a stat like this that Chris is about to break down, it's pretty insane because he is not a high flyer of the highest order like some of these other guys, and he's not that big either.
That's right. And last night, I think I said it earlier, but De'Aaron was just ridiculous when it came to attacking the paint. Last night in the game, he had 32 points in the paint, which is just absolutely absurd. Our guy Will Z Stats put out there, De'Aaron's 32 points in the paint last night is tied for fifth most points in the paint in a game this season. The five other players to reach 32-plus points in the paint in a game, Joel Embiid, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Alperen Şengün, and Nikola Jokic, along with De'Aaron Fox. Alan, this is a rhetorical question, but you know what all of those guys have in common that De'Aaron Fox does not have in common with them? Mm-hmm. Well, let me tell you. Joel Embiid, 7 feet tall. Mm-hmm. Giannis Antetokounmpo, 6'11". Alperen Şengün, 6'11". Nikola Jokic, I think he's like 7'2", but he's listed as 6'11". De'Aaron Fox, he's 6'3". And he's doing things that only centers in this league do. And if you look at the bigger picture, De'Aaron points in the paint on the season, he's third in the NBA right now. Really, you could say second because Ja's in front of him in terms of points in the paint per game, only behind Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who's at 15 points in the paint per game, De'Aaron sitting at 12. That to me is, and that's why I you know, the threes are great. I guess it's a necessary evil, but I think De'Aaron Fox, when he's at his best, De'Aaron Fox is a guy who gets to the rack, and really he's a center. Like you treat him from an efficiency standpoint like he is one of the most efficient centers in the NBA when it comes to scoring around the rim, and as is evident by some of those numbers, it's just not common. It is not common for a guard to finish at that level, and he's not Ja. He's not, you know, rising above the rim and you know, having crazy acrobatics. he's just really smart. He has a great sense of body control, which is something that Kyrie Irving had, which is what made Kyrie such a great finisher at the rim, just the ability to stay in the air and be able to finish against tougher, taller opponents. De'Aaron, to me, is that's his calling card, is being one of, if not the best, non-center finisher around the rim. And I think that this team needs to exploit it a lot more than they do.
We talk about Chris Paul and the mid-ranges and how, oh, he's the mid-range god. And when you talk about these guys that are keeping the mid-range alive, and Chris Paul's name comes up, Kevin Durant's name comes up, and those are two dudes who are older, right? The younger point guards that are keeping the mid-range alive, I think it's Shea and De'Aaron.
De'Aaron, for sure.
I don't even know who else. Luka doesn't really shoot mid-ranges. I think Trey is either a three or a floater type deal. When you look at these point guards or the guards in general, let's keep it specifically to
Steph Curry,
point guards.
Maybe ruin the game.
Maybe.
That's my takeaway.
I mean, of course, that's your takeaway. But why isn't De'Aaron Fox, at the very least, when you look at the calling card, and maybe we're figuring out that calling card, why isn't De'Aaron Fox talked about as far as a new age guard with more of an old school feel and keeping the mid-range alive? And he's probably one of the most prolific mid-range shooting guards. Yeah. In the league, he's got to be top five.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, because the NBA has unfortunately deemed that shot is the worst shot in basketball. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think, you know, statistically it is. I mean,
it's like a single in baseball.
Essentially, yeah. Exactly. It's not great. But at the same time, it's necessary. Like, you can't just eliminate the shot from the game. The game has essentially just become threes and layups. Those are the two most efficient shots when it comes to points per possession. And the mid-range shot just doesn't provide that level of efficiency. But at the same time, like you said, I mean, the best players in this league all have a mid-range jump shot. Kawhi Leonard goes to that mid-range jump shot. Kevin Durant, mid-range jump shot. It's been a tradition in this league, and I think it's really important because
Kawhi's a good one. Yeah.
Kawhi's the best at it.
But he's not a guard.
No, he's not a guard, but he's part of that KD list that mm-hmm. you were putting out for guys who really still use it. And it's so great because you can get to that shot whenever you want. It's the perfect counter. Again, especially for a guy like De'Aaron, if you're guarding De'Aaron Fox and he starts running towards the rim, you're going to back up as far as possible. You're going to give yourself as much room as possible because he'll blow by you if you play too close. So with that being the case, he's always going to have that mid-range shot available. They're always going to say, if you're not taking a three, I'm going to assume you're going to the rack. Mm-hmm. And so if De'Aaron can really just hone in on that mid-range shot and use it as a real counter, we've seen him use it in the past in clutch situations, that's where this dude, if he really starts taking 5 to 6 mid-ranges a game, Devin Booker's another one, mm-hmm. he can really, that's how he can get to that 30 points without getting 30 points per game, without shooting the amount of threes that we saw him, is really just finding his spots, getting to it, and attacking it time after time after time. And we saw him do that pretty much all year last year, and this year it just hasn't really been that aggressive looking to get to his spots. And I'd imagine we're going to see it in the playoffs, but we just haven't really seen it much during this regular season.
No, it's something that he can lean on whenever he wants. And I think one piece of this that doesn't get talked about enough is that all mid-range jump shots are not created equal, right? Distance matters.
Yes, absolutely.
And taking a jump shot that is 2 feet in front of the three-point line.
Foot on the line, pretty
much. That makes no sense, okay? Right. De'Aaron Fox gets so deep, they're basically bunnies.
Yeah.
He's not taking mid-range. A lot of them are in the key.
Yeah,
or 1 foot
at the free throw line,
pretty much.
Yeah.
Inside of the free throw line.
Yeah.
So he's not so his mid-range jump shots are not when you think of the idea of, well, if you're going to shoot from there, you might as well shoot it.
Yeah.
I would say...
It is a true middle ground of range.
Yes, exactly. I would say, and I would say a lot of times even closer than that, right? When I think some of the jump shots that you see and you're thinking, oh, I don't know that I would take... To your point, I would say KD because he can shoot from further away because he can jump, he can shoot over people. Yeah. Kawhi Leonard and his claw hands as well.
Yeah.
I would say the Splash Bros... Klay Thompson in his prime, he was taking he was taking mid ranges that would be considered bad shots, but it was Klay Thompson. Steph Curry, he takes a lot of mid ranges that are not, they're closer to the 3 point. Basically, is it closer to the 3 point line or the key? Right, those are the shots that people do not want to see. De'Aaron Fox, his mid ranges are 1 foot, 2 feet away from just being layups, but he's just not getting all the way to the cup. So I don't even know how much I would say that they're low percentage shots at all.
Yeah, no, I mean, especially when he hits it at the rate that he does. I think that it's really, again, I think that's the thing that can take De'Aaron's game to another level, is just figuring out how to spread out the wealth of those shots. And I think last night was he didn't really go to the mid-range much last night. It was a lot at the rim, but... Yeah,
it was a layup line.
It was, exactly. And then not every single week is... not every single game is going to be that layup line. But again, I'm just going to continue to push that De'Aaron... It all starts from him attacking the rim. Everything, every part of his game should come first after attacking the rim. The three-point shot should be after he's driven so many times that they're sagging off of him. I just think that I would love to see that established more in De'Aaron's game, because as is evident by last night, tying a career high, I just think he's at his best when he's attacking the rim and not, because here's the thing, if you're guarding De'Aaron, what's the number one thing that you're going to breathe a sigh of relief after he does? It's take a three. You're going to say, I thought I was going to have to chase this dude all around. I thought I was going to have to meet him at the rim or just try and chase behind him and get some sort of defensive attempt at it. But if he's shooting that three, you're living with that every single time. And that's just not how you should want to operate as an offensive player. You should want to attack them every single time and never feel like you're letting them off the hook. And it feels like every time, most of the time, when De'Aaron's taking a three, he's letting the other team off the hook.
Your calls, your texts, your Sack Chat when we get back. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.
Sacktown Sports and subscribe.
Calls are lining up. The texts are lining up. And the calls will line up again, I'm sure, at 1 p.m. when we give you a chance to win tickets to see Chris Brown, Golden One Center, on July 30th, thanks to Live Nation, who has teamed up with Sacktown Sports. This is from the 916 on the text line. Mitchell came in and played great. The three-guard lineup really worked well. Proof it's time to start Monk. Go run and gun and let Herter and Barnes be stars on the second team. The fact we haven't tried that is odd. It's not like we are some phenomenal team with the current rotation. That is from Folsom Mike. Shout out Folsom from the 916.
He put his name in it?
He did. Yes, he did. Yes, great. As we asked. Great. Thank you, Mike.
Good job. Keep it up.
Appreciate it.
Well, so the three-guard lineup rotating Davion or Keon? Is that how? So
yeah, it was there was lineups Malik out there where it was actually Davion, Keon, and Malik, I believe, for a good portion of it. And then, De'Aaron, Malik, and Keon, I believe, were on the floor at the same time as well last night. It worked really well, but I think it definitely helps when Davion is shooting that way. That keeps him on the floor for sure. Or just scoring in general, Davion, that's going to keep him on the floor. I don't know if we're going to see a lot more of it. To me, the thing that sparks my interest a lot more is just having the Kevin Herter greater conversation again.
And
it's time to bring that up. And we can talk about that later.
And part of the reason it looked bad, and Frankie and I were going back and forth in the group chat, they were hunting. They were hunting last night, It was Herter hunting season, unfortunately. And look, when somebody hits four threes who is not a three-point shooter, a prolific three-point shooter, that's going to make everything look a little bit better. So let's just keep that in mind as well. The calls are stacking up. So let's start here with JR. JR wants to be a part of the conversation. What's up, JR? You're on Styles and Watkins. What you got for us?
What's up, girls? Hey, nothing like a Kings victory over the Lakers to solve everything.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
The world.
It's the best remedy in the world.
Were you guys around on the Earth back in 2001?
Barely.
Were you actually?
Yes, I
assume
so.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know the great story of when we burnt the jersey at half court?
Yes, yes. Whitey has told me about that. Yes.
Oh, my God. Game four of the five-game series. Not the 2002, the year before. And they did a Mission Impossible theme. And they lit the friggin' jersey on fire. Phil Jackson literally like was looking across, going, I'm not going to make it out of this cow town alive tonight. And we didn't sit down the whole friggin' game. Honest to God. Yeah. All 48 minutes, and we were there for like an hour and a half afterwards. They had to kick us out of Arco going, yeah, people, you need to go home. And we, so last night felt really good to be up on them. And can we just go ahead and broach a subject that LeBron 100% is on PEDs? 100%.
Dude, he was powering through Alex Len last night like he was butter.
100%. Yeah, I mean, I know I went to school with Barry Bonds, and I talked to him, and he said, yeah, 100%, I gave him those drugs. And that's the way it is. That's the way we roll.
Thanks for the call, JR.
Hey, man, all the greats are on it.
There you go. Yeah, the beam definitely feels, it just hits different,
it's
as
a little
kids
brighter.
Say,
yeah.
Against the Lakers. Let's get to Michael, who wants to be a part of the conversation. What's up, Michael? You're on Styles and Watkins. What you got for us?
Hey, how you doing?
We're good.
But, hey, I'm just, you know, I'm seeing some patterns of play by the Kings right now. Sabonis is an undersized big man that's having a hard time finishing in key points of the games. And Keegan Murray, I love him. Kevin Huerter, great shooter. But, you know, somebody needs to help out De'Aaron and Monk as far as scoring when they came on the line. And I just don't know when to make that better.
Yeah, no, I mean, absolutely. To me, that is a legitimate problem with this team, and I talked about it last year during the playoffs. I think it's a very, very real thing. Down the stretch, it's De'Aaron and Malik, and you're living and dying by that. And frankly, the Kings have nobody else who they can put the ball in their hands at the end of games.
Well, you can't put the ball in their hands, but it's not even about that. It's about, can you hit a spray three? Can you do something?
Sure, but like nobody else can create those things besides De'Aaron and Malik.
Yeah.
Like, no, in order to get the spray three, you've got to drive the lane. And Keegan's not driving and kicking at all. HB doesn't drive and kick at all. Malik and De'Aaron are the only two who have the ability to actually get some real rim pressure and create their own shot, too. I mean, we see Keegan kind of developing that nice little step back mid-range jump shots looking nice on Keegan. But you're not going to be able to go to that with, you know, 2 minutes to go in the fourth quarter.
That would be a bad
shot. Yeah, you're probably, that's your only move. You have to have a wide variety of moves to keep defenders on their toes. It's a real problem. I think in general,
Davion has a little bit.
Davion's not going to be on the floor in the last 2 minutes.
No.
Do you need more?
How many teams have
more
playmakers? How many teams have more than two playmakers on the court at the same time, though?
Not a lot, but the great ones. I mean, that's been the thing that's let the Celtics down, even. Like, you have a cap of how good you can be if you don't have those orchestrators. The Kings have two of the orchestrators. And it's good to have two and not one, because there are teams out there who only have one guy. But it's definitely a legitimate problem that I noticed. It showed a lot in the playoffs when, they shut down Sabonis, and that really means that everything has to be created by Malik and De'Aaron.
Yeah, and how do you go out and get that guy we've talked about? Well, here's the problem. That's a different conversation than the backup point guard, though. Because if you go out and get Tyus Jones and Trey Jones or Trey Jones, I don't think that either of them would be playing in crunch. You wouldn't have three of them out there.
Right, right.
The problem is you don't have a playmaking wing.
Sure.
That's ultimately the problem. And it's not just, to your point, it's not a problem with solely the Kings. It's a problem with multiple teams. And we see on the text line right here, 916, Sabonis is a four, not a five. So you have a Sabonis.
I disagree.
Whether you agree with that or not, Sabonis is limited. And you need to have one of those things. You need to have a big that you can rely on at any point of the game, or you need to have multiple playmakers, and the Kings have neither.
Yeah.
But they won last night, people.
They sure did.
They won last night, people. Let's talk to our guy, Doug, who wants to be a part of the conversation. What's up, Doug? You're on Styles and Watkins. What you got for us?
Gentlemen, good morning. you know what? Your guys' breadth of work is really good. I mean, I think I know quite a bit about this game, and I've been around it for a long time, but the conversations that you have and the topics that you have, depending on who picks those, but you guys got really good information, and I really enjoy our calling the show because you guys are just not, well, this is what we think, you know, and I'm really happy with that. So I want
we appreciate you, Doug.
First.
Thank you.
Hey, all right. On the Malik Monk thing, for me, I keep that guy with that second team because he seems to flourish there. Mm-hmm. And, I, you know, however they're going to work it out. Those guys, if they don't play well in the first half of the game, you start looking at their minutes at the end of the game, and they got 15 minutes, 12 minutes, 18 minutes. So if they're not on a burner, they're not going to see the court because I guess there's not enough there that they can bring that will keep them on the court. So there's that. On the De'Aaron Fox on the mid-range, for me, and this is I've been coaching for a long time as well, and I watch this stuff and I'm going, that was the worst thing that somebody came up with points per possession. The reason I say that is because I believe in just go play basketball.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And the shots come where they come from.
Yep.
But he said, no, you got to have a three. And then what happens when the Kings go in and you have a night when you're cold and you go, let's say 5 for 32.
Yeah.
Okay, have we done that? I'm sure we have. But what happens? Then you shoot yourself right out of the game if you're not hot.
That's
and
right.
Then you're limited on what your options are. So sign Monk 4 for 80 or 4 for 76, and that will be a great offseason signing for us. Have a great day. Thank you so much. I appreciate you.
Thank you, Doug. Right.
Thanks for the call, Doug. Yeah, a lot of great stuff there. And to round it out, let's go to Mitch. Mitch, what you got for us?
I'm Chris. How you guys doing?
Good.
We're
how you
good.
Doing,
we're
Mitch?
Good.
Good. Great game.
Good. Yeah, it was awesome.
I like a lot. Sabonis is back to being his triple-double machine.
Yep.
Fox is showing you why he's one of the best point guards. He's a scorer. Play more of a bench. Rest these stars. And the season's almost coming down to end. We'll be in the playoffs, opening the top four, top five. I want to see more of the bench players. And they can score. I was happy to see the young guys, the youth. Can't listen more off the top of my head, but I'm glad we can be more consistent. I like our chances.
Thanks for the call, Mitch.
Yeah, man. You can say that again, Mitch.
Well, the Davion thing, and you can't gloss over it, and not that anybody's glossing over it, but the Davion thing, and look, if you are not a shooter and you're feeling it, there is nothing that feels better than that. And I'll tell you this, you don't have to be a shooter to get hot. And Davion is not going to go 4-4 from three for the rest of the season.
Yeah.
But to have that confidence at this time,
yes,
can definitely
it.
Help.
I need it.
Shooting, a lot of it is confidence. We sit there and we're at most of the games. You'll be there tonight.
That's
I won't be there tonight. But most of the games, we're there during the pregame and we're watching these dudes warm up.
Yep.
And based on the timing and when I get there, a lot of times I see Davion's workout and I see JaVale's workout. I see the same guys and then we go in and we do the pregame presser.
Yep.
And Davion is out there hitting. He's hitting.
You know what? It's not just him either.
And it's not just him. Jimmy JaVale be hitting too.
It's JaVale. It's Alex Len be hitting.
Yeah.
Like these dudes, like you said, like just because they aren't shooters does not mean they are not still professional buckets. Like,
right. And my point is,
they can all hit it.
Obviously, it's different when the lights are bright.
Of course. Of course.
But you're realizing if you're Davion. It was like me on the driving range today, right? Just take your time because nobody's flying at you.
Right.
They're willing to let you shoot that so you don't have to rush,
no
right?
Rush
you don't want to get in your head too much, but you don't have to rush. And if Davion has figured some things out to where he is just – then the other thing is if he turns into a good enough shooter at this time or at least a hot enough shooter that they have to respect it, now instead of the Kings' rotations being off, the other team's rotations are off. When we get back, thanks for all the calls. That was outstanding.
Yes, that was
keep them coming, 916-339-1140. And also, the text line and the SAC chat as well. Shout out to the SAC chat, as always. When we return, we discuss the Kings. You know those memes out there, and there's a cycle, and you say, we are here.
Yes.
We all know where we're at with the Kings in the cycle. Can they break it tonight? Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.